is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
NATO is not a church organization. It is not a charity organization. It's a war organization. You know, you cannot try to collar and chain this bear, the Russian bear, with hot states that are hostile to you.
That's former South African government minister Tokyo Sikwahile, a former liberation fighter with close ties to Russia, on Moscow's concern about NATO expansion. Details coming up. Also, Libya risks a return to violence and division as the standoff continues between its prime ministers. These stories and more on African News Tonight. But first, our top story. One of South Africa's most respected former liberation fighters with close ties to Russia has appealed to Moscow and the Ukrainian government to negotiate an end to the war in the Eastern European country as soon as possible. Businessman and former government minister Tokyo Sikwahile says the conflict means the threat of a nuclear weapon being used is very real. He also warns that economic sanctions being imposed on Russian President Vladimir Putin and his inner circle could have serious unintended consequences. Darren Taylor reports.
Sikwahile spent the first 5 years of the 1970s in the then Soviet Union as a member of South Africa's Communist Party and the African National Congress's armed wing, Umkhonto weSizwe, or Spear of the Nation.
We know that part of the world very well as members of the Liberation Alliance, who worked, who lived, who studied, who trained in the Soviet Union. Let me take my own case. I lived in Moscow. We did our theoretical trainings in Moscow and in St. Petersburg at the time called Leningrad.
Sikwahile completed military training, which included instruction in explosives and marksmanship with Kalashnikov rifles and Makarov pistols in what's now Ukraine.
The Russians and the Ukrainians welcomed us. They are brothers, they are sisters. It's so sad today to see them at daggers drawn, or at tanks drawn, or at rockets drawn.
He came back to South Africa in 1976, but didn't get much time to put his Soviet-inspired skills into practice. A few months after his return from Moscow, a young Sikwahile was involved in a shootout with apartheid forces and seriously wounded. He was later convicted of terrorism and imprisoned on Robben Island with future president and ANC leader Nelson Mandela. They were inmates together for 13 years, both released in early 1990. Sikwahile says only through long discussions and negotiations, similar to those that ended apartheid in South Africa, will the war in Ukraine stop.
Our position should be to encourage those discussions face to face. It's not easy. I know there's been talk about mediating this issue. Mediation started in 2014, and it has gotten people nowhere.
He warns that without good faith talks, the tragedy unfolding in Ukraine could engulf more of Eastern Europe. That, says Sikwahile, would spark a wider humanitarian and economic crisis with devastating consequences for the world. He has mixed feelings about the sanctions being imposed on Moscow. They could serve a good purpose, he says, but will also cause hardship around the world and could result in the Russian people being punished for their government's actions. Sikwahile acknowledges the situation in Ukraine scares him.
The last two world wars emanated from the territory of Europe. The Europeans are at it again, and this time round, with very sophisticated weapons, anything can happen with NATO and Russia. Whether it's the war itself or the sanctions, we are going to be affected as Africa.
Sikwahile says the Putin regime clearly feels threatened by NATO and European Union expansion in Eastern Europe.
The Ukrainians have got the right of their own self-determination, the right of their sovereignty, the right of territorial authority and integrity. But at the same time, Russia has got very vital security national security concerns. NATO is not a church organization. It is not a church organization. It's a war organization. You know, you cannot try to collar and chain this bear, the Russian bear, with hot states that are hostile to it.
He says Putin has watched in recent years as states such as Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania have joined NATO. While invading a neighbor is no way to respond to perceived threats, says Sekwale, he understands what's driving Putin's attack on Ukraine. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
As the war rages on in Ukraine, thousands of foreign citizens have frantically been trying to flee the war zone and head to safer parts of the country or to leave Ukraine entirely. From Harare, reporter Kudzai Zenawashi speaks with a Zimbabwean who is in Ukraine to better understand the situation on the ground.
The war block up now,
that is a social media video by Courage Duku, a Zimbabwean in Ukraine, speaking in Shona. He is calling on any countryman close to his location to get in touch so they plan to escape the fighting. He speaks with VOA about his journey out of the capital, Kyiv.
I didn't encounter any challenges on my way coming. It was we were the first people to move out from the city, so I think it was far much better than others. But others were experiencing like a lot of checkpoints from police and all that.
He says this is despite the worsening situation on the ground.
The situation on the ground, it was really bad, I think, 1 or 2 days before. But right now, I think it's a little bit calm. I don't know about other cities. But it was really bad in Kyiv and Kharkov, Sumy, other cities of Ukraine, you know. But I get out here. I used my own car, you know, from Kyiv to Lviv. Right now, I'm in another city close to Polish border, so I'm still thinking where to go right now, you know.
Monica Mutswangwa is the Minister of Information in Zimbabwe. She told journalists recently that the government is working to get Zimbabweans out of Ukraine.
Cabinet would like to reassure the nation that government is taking all necessary steps to evacuate students and other nationals from Ukraine following the outbreak of war with Russia. The country's missions to Moscow and Berlin are facilitating the evacuation mission. To date, a total of 118 students have relocated to the following safer places. In Romania, we've got 28, in Hungary, 15, Slovakia, 26, and in Poland, we have 49 of our students there. Government is in the process of buying tickets for these students to come home.
The government has said about 250 Zimbabweans were in Ukraine before the fighting started. They are among several thousand citizens of African nations, most of them students trying to flee the conflict. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zenawashi from Harare.
Sweden said today it is going to withdraw its 220 soldiers from the UN peacekeeping mission in Mali in June 2023, a year earlier than planned. No reason was given, but Sweden has said the involvement of about 800 Russian contractors is complicating its presence in Mali, which is dealing with worsening violent attacks from Islamic extremists. Mali is ruled by a military junta which staged successive coups in 2020 and 2021 and has reneged on a promise to hold early elections, fraying its alliance with Western nations. Nigerian authorities say security forces have killed more than 200 armed bandits in 4 days of gun battles in central Niger state. Nigeria has been struggling to contain growing violence by armed groups known for mass kidnappings for ransom. The United Nations Environment Assembly meeting in Nairobi has adopted a resolution detailing what to do about plastic pollution. It calls for 2 years of negotiations towards a comprehensive international treaty on the full life cycle of plastics. Mohamed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
Delegates from 175 countries endorsed an agreement Wednesday that addresses plastic waste. The United Nations says 400 million tons of plastic is produced every year, and that figure is set to double by 2040. Rwanda is one of the countries that ban plastic in its territory and is pushing for a plastic-free world. Rwanda's Environment Minister, Jean Mujawamariya, said her country will benefit a great deal from global regulation of the use of plastics.
If adopted, the creation of an international legally binding instrument would be a great significance for countries like Rwanda. While we have made good progress, systematic global changes are needed if we are to clean up the current mess, develop sustainable alternatives, and make them affordable.
The debate surrounding plastic pollution has been on the UN agenda since 2012. Recycling has remained one of the effective ways of reducing plastics. The Environmental Investigation Agency, an environmental non-profit organization, said the existing method of managing plastic is not sustainable. Less than 10% of plastic that have been produced is being recycled, 76% is discarded into landfills, and experts warn its production will triple by 2050. Amina Mohammed, the United Nations Deputy Secretary General, told the meeting attendees not to fear a future without plastic.
So while we have learned to recycle plastic, we need a far more robust approach to tackle this enormous problem and ensure systemic change that includes strong action upstream and downstream. We must be ambitious and move fast if we're to win this battle. This is going to require genuine collaborations and partnerships with a shared vision.
The fight against plastic pollution aims to reduce plastic going into the oceans by 80% by the end of the year 2040 and create 700,000 jobs by that time. Jane Patton, the Plastic and Petrochemicals Campaign Manager at the Center for International Environmental Law, told VOA the agreement will mandate companies producing plastics manage the waste being emitted.
The resolution specifically calls for a legally binding instrument, which is good because, as we've seen, the companies that are producing this plastic waste and putting it into the environment, they usually don't actually follow through on commitments unless they are legally bound to do that. And so we're excited to see that the treaty will have both mandatory and voluntary commitments by governments and that will affect companies to actually address this problem.
The head of the UN Environment Program, Inga Andersen, said adopting the plastic treaty is the most important international environmental agreement since the 2016 Paris Climate Accord took effect. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
Libya risks a return to violence and division as a standoff between newly chosen Prime Minister Fatih Bassaga and the incumbent Abdulhamid al-Dabiba continues. According to a Reuters report, Bassaga was due to take the oath of office in Tobruk, but the current Tripoli administration of Dabiba has vowed not to cede power. The position of international powers will be key in the coming fight for control of Libya, with a risk of renewed war after a year and a half of comparative peace between major factions for control of the oil-rich country. Armed groups affiliated with opposing factions have mobilized in the capital, while foreign forces, including those from Russia and Turkey, remain entrenched in Libya on different sides. The United States has cast doubt over the validity of Parliament's effort to install Bassaga. Anglophone separatists in Cameroon have claimed responsibility for an attack Wednesday that killed 7 people, including a senior official and a mayor. Cameroon's military says the officials were on a tour to raise support against the rebels when a homemade bomb hit their car. Moki Edwin Kenzeka reports from Yaoundé.
The Cameroon military says a homemade bomb exploded on Wednesday, killing the highest government official, mayor, a traditional ruler, and popular politician in the Ekondo Titi district in Cameroon's English-speaking southwest region. The government says the explosive device hit the official's car in Bekora village. The government says six officials, including Timothy Aboloa, highest government official in Ekondo Titi, Nanji Kenneth, mayor of Ekondo Titi, and Ebeku William, the Ekondo Titi president of Cameroon's ruling Cameroon People's Democratic Movement Party, died on the spot. Cameroon's military said after the device exploded, separatist fighters hiding in a nearby bush started shooting heavily. Bernard Okalia Bilai is the governor of the Southwest region. Bilai says several government troops sustained injuries and a military official died while being rushed to a local hospital by the military. Bilai spoke during a press conference broadcast by local media, including Cameroon State broadcaster CRTV.
All the six occupants of the car died. The other forces of law were in the pickup following the GO car were wounded. One young officer, a lieutenant, was wounded and he too passed away. So in that attack, we have lost seven persons.
Bilai said the officials were on a Meet the People tour of Ekondo Titi. He said during the tour, the officials were expected to educate civilians on braving separatists and relaunch economic activities in their towns and villages. Bilai said the officials were also asking civilians to report suspected fighters hiding in their towns and villages. Cameroon's military on Thursday said troops were deployed to Ekondo Titi shortly after the explosion. The military said the troops will track and arrest or kill the fighters should government troops face any resistance from the rebels. Capo Daniel is the deputy defense chief of staff for the Ambazonia Defense Forces, said to be the largest separatist group in Cameroon. Capo says separatists regret that one fighter has been missing since Wednesday's attack. He says no fighter was wounded and none were killed by government troops in the Ekondo Titi attack, as reported by Cameroon military. Capo spoke to VOA via a messaging app.
This operation is part of our liberation operations to end the Cameroon occupation and rule of Ambazonian territory. The divisional officer is in charge of coordinating Cameroon military operation and Cameroon occupation of Ambazonian territory. We will continue to battle and resist Cameroon rule of Ambazonia until the last Cameroon military is booted out of our territory.
Cameroon separatists have been fighting since 2017 to carve out an independent English-speaking state in the majority French-speaking Cameroon. The separatists say their state will be called Ambazonia. Fighters have vowed to attack any worker sent by the central government in Yaoundé to the English-speaking western regions. The separatists say they will continue attacking government offices and staff until the central government withdraws its troops from the troubled Anglophone regions. The United Nations says the conflict has left more than 3,500 people dead and 750,000 displaced. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
In what is seen as a major cabinet reshuffle, Mozambique President Filipe Nyusi has fired six ministers, including the country's finance minister. Reuters, quoting a presidential statement, says Filipe used the power accorded to him by the constitution to dismiss the ministers. No reason was given for the dismissal. The statement also did not announce any new appointments or indications on when the vacant positions will be filled. Transportation industry groups say the latest labor actions by South African truck drivers are holding the industry ransom. In recent days, South Africa truck drivers have blocked roads and held marches to push their demands, which include higher pay and an end to the use of foreign drivers in the country. Arigando in Bulawayo, Zimbabwe, gives us more on the regional impact.
For the past few days, members of the All Truck Drivers Forum, or ATDF, in South Africa has blocked some highways. There have been reports of attacks on foreign drivers and their trucks. The Road Freight Association in South Africa said it has called on the South African police to safeguard drivers and to protect vehicles and cargo. Gavin Kelly is the chief executive of the RFA.
Is where this ATDF want the South African companies, or the transporters in this case, to employ South Africans only. Irrespective of where that travels, whether it's locally or going cross-border into neighbouring countries, just like what is required in Namibia, Botswana and Zambia. This has nothing to do with not allowing foreigners coming into the country driving foreign vehicles.
The striking drivers have vowed not to back down from their demands, which include a 15% wage increase and that South African registered trucks be driven by South Africans. Eugene Blovu with the Southern Africa Truck Drivers Association of Zambia and the trucker himself says South Africans no longer want foreign drivers given the country's high unemployment rate.
It is important to note that so far from the time these happenings started, more than 200 Zambian drivers have decided to let go of their jobs. Most of the Zambian drivers working for these companies have decided to step down.
Lovu adds that while a number of his members are complying, there are glitches and some companies are slow in making final salary payments.
We have advised our members to let go of their jobs, though we know it's not an easy decision. People have served South African companies for more than 10 years. We have our comrades who have even married in South Africa and they have kids. So for them just to let go and come back home like that without being compensated adequately for the job that they have done, as well as help them with probably documentation for their kids and stuff.
Lovu says South Africa must take responsibility for attacks on foreign drivers and trucks and that dialogue must take place. The Road Freight Association's Kelly says if the disturbances continue, the effect will be felt around the region.
If the uncertainty or the violence or the instability remains, then there are countries in the region who will decide to move their goods via a different set of ports.
South Africa's Ports and Highways serve as a key lifeline for cargo bound for its landlocked neighbors, Botswana, Lesotho, Zambia, and Zimbabwe. In recent years, anti-foreign sentiment has risen in South Africa, which is struggling with an employment rate of more than 30%. There have been repeated attacks on foreigners over the past few years. Reporting for VOA, this is Adi Gondo in Bulawayo, Zimbabwe.
A gold mine collapse in Western Guinea has killed at least 18 people. A Reuters report indicates the accident took place Monday in an informal gold mine in Gaoula, about 386 kilometers from the capital, Conakry. Accidents are common at so-called informal mines across West Africa, where they operate without much oversight or regulation. At least 15 people were killed in a similar incident at an informal gold mine in northeastern Guinea last May. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mukbili Abaro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing The Voice of America.
The Basketball Africa League is back. Voice of America joins forces with Africa's premier men's basketball league to bring you the second season of the BAL. It is game on March 5th, 2022. 38 games, 12 teams leaving it all on the court in Senegal, Egypt and Rwanda to determine the 2022 season champion. Tune in to VOA 24/7, FMs, and to our radio and TV affiliates for some action. Pre-game, play-by-play, post-game, daily highlights, delivered by our finest commentators. Basketball Africa League 2022 on Voice of America. May the best team win.